Can you welcome Colette now and her group and their presentation?
It's my pleasure and my privilege to introduce this evening's session, Just Politics, Perspectives from Emerging Leaders. And having listened to a number of our ecumenical friends as our keynote speakers this weekend, we have looked within our own National Justice and Peace Network for tonight's contributors, with the aim of strengthening our own next generation of leaders, both those you can see here on the panel and others who are also in the room. And we're going to be learning from their wisdom. My name's Colette Joyce, and I am the Justice and Peace Coordinator for the Diocese of Westminster, and I make it a particular passion and priority of mine to focus on young adult formation, or particularly perhaps post-confirmation formation, that chance once it becomes optional for people to opt in to their Catholic lives and to support and nurture young people in that. Now, I am not a young person. And this often comes as a bit of a surprise to people. It's not actually always that easy to identify who the young people are in a church where many more priests and parishioners than ever before are in their 70s, 80s and 90s. It's not that we've lost our young people, I often tell people. It's that we've got a lot more older people, which is a good thing because we're all living longer. But it makes it harder for young people to break through. So something of tonight is about being deliberate and intentional to make sure those voices get heard early. And you don't have to wait till you're in your 50s, 60s or 70s before you get to speak. In Westminster Diocese, we sadly lost the much-loved priest, Father Dominic McKenna, this year. And many people were very upset that we'd lost one of the young ones. He was 73. 2 years off retirement, and that was considered, and was indeed, a great tragedy. I was in my mid-30s when I first came to conference, and at that point I was already managing a refugee day centre, nearly 20 years ago. So how long does it take to stop being a young person at conference, never mind anywhere else in the church? And there's a great need to take a certain care, I think, with our language, because it's become commonplace to refer to the young people and mean both children and younger adults. I sometimes hear people talk about young people and then talk about going into schools. I'm like, okay, they are young people, but children are a different entity to young adults. All our panelists here are over 18. And as over 18s, they may be young, but they are adults, full adults, capable to take full part in our civic life, including, of course, voting in and indeed standing for elections. And I'm often reminded that Jesus began his public ministry at the age of 12, adulthood in his community at the time, and he completed it by the age of 33. The group who gathered round him would have looked something similar to the panel we have here tonight. So here we see something of the energy from which the early church emerged and from which the church of our day continues to emerge. And it's incumbent on us to listen to their contribution. The group have formed their own questions and their own programme. So I'm now going to hand over to Michael to chair. And as I do that, I'm going to introduce the panel to you. So wave when I call your name. So Eleanor Marshall, first of all, is 18 years old. You might remember her starting Pockets for Peace at conference, her early foray into social action a couple of years ago. She was also one of the first people to receive a Faith in Action Award in her diocese. She's just finished her A-levels and will be doing a gap year in youth work. Then we have Chucks, who's kindly let me off pronouncing his full name. He volunteers for CAFOD and is a part of Spark in Leeds. He advocates for climate justice and cares for the elderly in his spare time. And it's his third time here at conference. We have Anna Barrett, who is working as a sustainability lead in a secondary school in Berkshire. She studied horticulture and plant science at the Eden Project, and it's also her third time at conference. Hannah Lonergan. Welcome, Hannah. Hannah is a Faith in Action volunteer with the Columbans, and she's currently spending a lot of her time working with people with lived experience of seeking sanctuary, and she's based in Birmingham. Anna Marshall is currently studying philosophy and theology at Oxford University. She's delivered social action days in schools. And you all know her as one of the musicians in the band, along with sister Eleanor, for a good many years. We have Michael Archibald from the Diocese of Hexham and Newcastle, well known to many of us. He came to his first conference at the age of 5. And he's now working with elder people in physiotherapy. We have Garrett Orr. Welcome, Garrett. He's 19 and his dad is Steve. So now over to Michael.
Thank you very much, Colette, and thank you, John, for those introductions. So I was talking to my friend the other day about this panel, and I said that it was going to be on the Saturday evening of the NJPN conference. And she said to me, so is it one of the main sessions? Like, is everyone going to be there? And I said, yeah. And she went, so you're basically Coldplay at Glastonbury. and I laughed and I said, yeah. And now I'm thinking that does that mean the Columbans are our supporting act? But yeah, so thank you for the introductions. So some of you may know me already, but if you don't, I'm Michael. I've been attending the NJPN conferences since 2020. My first one was that online one. I work for Million Minutes Catholic Youth Agency and have done since August last year, so just coming up to a year now. As an organization that works for and with young people, us at Million Minutes, we find ourselves being asked, where are all the young people? A view that, whilst stemming from concern around low church attendance, also reflects this kind of misconception that young people and young adults are disinterested in or disengaged with current affairs. So at the beginning of this year, with the help of Pax Christi, we launched a new 6-step program called Celebrating Young People Revival, aimed at engaging and resourcing Catholic schools to help encourage and empower youth voice. We did this in order to enter into an open conversation with young people where we could understand where they were coming from. With the knowledge that the voices of young people, meaning those aged 11 to 18, are often at risk of going unheard in many spaces throughout society, the first step of this program was to listen. Get that. It took the form of a questionnaire that we sent around to 7 schools. And these pupils filled out this questionnaire during form time as homework or in core RE classes. In response, we received powerful insight into the experiences of young people and where they are. So before we jump into this discussion with my wonderful panel here, I would like to go through some of the results of the questionnaire that Million Minutes pulled together after this period of listening. I would urge you, however, to take these statistics, if you could even call them that, with a pinch of salt, because it's not necessarily these results that matter, with it being such a small sample size, but rather that really we're doing what no one else is doing. Not to pat myself on the back or anything. The first question we asked was, what are the top 3 issues affecting your communities? The theme of conflict ranked the highest, with sentiments around war and desire for peace coming up most, with the conflict following October 7th running in the news almost continuously when we sent round this questionnaire. Perhaps if we had run the questionnaire just a few weeks ago, or when we go to run it next year, it might look totally different. Well-being, which covered a wide range of topics, including happiness, love, joy, safety and security, basic needs and family support, came second. And issues surrounding equality, such as racism, bigotry and prejudice, discrimination and inclusion, came third. The other notable themes that came up were financial issues, environment and animals, crime, and health. Then we also asked these young people to think about those issues that they just named, and thinking about whether they, as young people right now, believe they could make a difference. Almost 70% said yes, they could, followed by 26% saying no, they couldn't, and 6% not providing an answer to the question. Now, we asked more questions, but I just want to stop here at this one. The question was, how much do you think the church cares about the voice of young people? Around 47% say the church cares a lot. Another 47% say the church cares a little. And the remaining 6% says the church doesn't care at all. Now, you might feel that this question is a bit too specific to the Catholic context, with it being centered around the church. But I would just like to reflect on what church might mean to young people, to these young people in Catholic schools. The church probably means figures of authority. It might mean their parish priest, their bishop. It might be their teacher, their head teacher. It might even be the Pope, local and global leaders. What happens if we swap out the church to the government? Would the results of 47% a lot, 47% a little, and 6% not at all look the same? Or do you think they would look a bit different? Now, with all of that in mind, I'm going to transition over to our panel of young adults here, where I'll be asking them a handful of questions, and then we'll take some questions from you, our audience, and hopefully we'll be done before 10. I know how these things tend to run on. Okay, so question number one. What from the conference have you learned so far, and what has challenged you? Starting off easy. Don't all rush to go first. What from the conference have you learned so far, and what has challenged you?
Hi, everyone. So from the conference, I think the Lord Bishop made a very nice intro yesterday, and that really set the pace for me. The true reflection on just polities, which is polities we should be pure, and we should polities where our leaders should be able to harness the challenges which we are asking them to solve, rather than maybe looking at the speaker or whoever is presenting those challenges, but try to solve the challenges which the constituents, the people, the voices of the masses have raised. And in all the sections and the workshops this morning, in the afternoon, we've seen different groups buttress on those points and try to talk about them. And in my conversation with the young people, everyone I've shared tables with in different times of meal time, I've really seen people who are passionate, people who really want to see change happen, people who want to see this burden not passed down to young people, but seeing this solved before, during their lifetime. Thank you.
I think similarly to what you said, I think I found it really inspiring and hopeful that there are people that care about the issues that I do and that my peers do across generations, and it's been really valuable for me to have those conversations with such a wonderful group of people. I think I found that most valuable so far.
I think what's struck me particularly this conference is I had a chat with Paul Southgate about this. I think we've really seen a sort of like professionalisation of the conference. The fact that we had former MP, a Lord, and just like a number of you folks who've been involved in all sorts of like activism and even research, it's been really great to see. And I think what I take home for it is just how important this like network continues, because both from ourselves here on the panel and yourselves, through that networking, like, we can create like really, really effective change. I know for me, that's always what keeps me coming back to conference, is the sort of opportunity to like carry out those good works. And just with having yourselves there, I think that's like a huge part of the reason. So it's just nice to see that continuing to happen.
Anything from this side?
I would say as well, I'm going to focus on the challenge bit of the question, and has anything particularly challenged me? And I think one thing that challenged me was right back at the start on the Friday night, talking about a shared language. And I think that's an issue that we've all kind of discussed in our free time as well. Be it from labels, do we call ourselves Catholics? What does that mean? Is it something that the world recognises around us? Does it mean what we want it to mean? Does it mean something else? So even something as simple as calling ourselves a Catholic isn't a shared language that, well, even between us, we couldn't find what that means. And I know there's, I'm sure it's the same for all of you. So I think that's a massive challenge for us to kind of, that shared language idea keeps coming back to me. And the more I think about it, the more it challenges me to try and work out, is there something in common? And what is that? Yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so next question is, we're going to dive into it now. What did you find interesting about this general election and the lead up to it? What do you think the impact has been on your local area, your peers, or yourself?
I think what unfortunately struck me about this election was I found there was a sort of like real lack of vision. I felt like most of the election campaign, it was more that you were being asked to like vote against something than necessarily for something. And I think that can be like incredibly frustrating when I think everyone in this room is all like very focused on good works and making a difference. And it did just sort of feel like you were kind of shouting out into the void. And I think it's fair to say that we probably didn't get the most detailed plans on manifestos, and that was definitely for political reasons. But what I'm hopeful about is I think we now have a government that listens. And previous conferences, I think it was really hard that we kept making all these ideas, and then when you'd go to write your MP, it was just sort of, you're kind of shouting in the wind. So I'm quite hopeful now going forward that there'll be like a lot more actionable sort of community-led work, and I'd like to think that's because of this new intake of MPs, and I'm hopeful that it'll be quite like a listening house. And I think for conference as well, especially moving on from the theme of just politics, I think going forward we should have some like really effective sort of like, I don't know, I think we spoke once about like a kind of like mission focused project that would be able to make like a sort of real practical difference. So I'd say despite being a bit nervous at the start, I think I am starting to feel a lot more hopeful about what could happen and how the network could like continue to use that platform for common good. I'll stop waffling now.
I agree with what Michael said about the lack of vision, but I also wanted to add to that and say I saw a lack of humanity. Because this was the first time I voted and the first time I was kind of involved in politics. So I did watch a bit of the election debate, and something that really struck me was kind of the language of it and how everything seemed so kind of pragmatic. It felt to me like quite a harmful way, in a way that didn't really express my views and kind of what I want, how I wanted my government to feel and government to care. Specifically, it was when they were talking about refugees and immigration and the language about that, because you had Rishi Sunak talking about sending people off to Rwanda, and you had Starmer talking about sending back people back to their own homes, but you didn't have any humanity in it about the kind of the experiences these people were having, and that really kind of shocked me about the lack, because both sides were just so logical and so cold about everything, and it's like I want policies and politics that consider the humanity of people and consider
I am not as clear at making points. I tend to wander a little bit, so I apologise for that in advance. But I think that what I would like to say overall is that it takes, for me anyway, a lot of effort, and a lot of just tenacity to cling to hope and optimism. And I honestly feel like it's a battle sometimes. And I think that that's true for a lot of other young people. In fact, I know that it is. That we're trying really, really hard. But that I don't blame other young people who we may look at and think, gosh, you're so apathetic. there's a reason. It's absolutely a self-protection mechanism. The world is an incredibly scary place, as I'm sure that you know. But I think what I'm trying to say is that young people should not necessarily be blamed for their apathy. That it's very scary. But that at the school that that I work at, which is a secondary school, we had a mock election where the students voted. You know, they did a mock election. And the Green Party won by nearly 100 votes. It was an absolute landslide. And I take a lot of hope from that. I really do. And this is, you know, this is a pretty well-to-do area where people are much more engaged in local politics because they feel like they have more of a voice. But I do take courage from that.
Something I noticed leading up to the election, I had a lot of friends who decided not to vote. And their reasoning for it wasn't... I mean, it was partly because they didn't feel represented, but a lot of them had almost given up hope and they just felt that they didn't even want to think about it. They just wanted to pretend it wasn't happening and just get on with their lives. And I think it's terrifying to me that we've got to the point where people are thinking like that. So, yeah.
I'll kind of focus on the impact it had on me because this election allowed so many vulgar languages. It was brazenly open. And one of the parties, which you all know, someone actually said, when they arrive on our shores, you should shoot them. Yeah. And the name of your party doesn't really, suggest what you are doing. Because I would say, when you say reform, what are you reforming? Because that's not what you should be saying. Because, and just like the previous speaker said, where does the humanity come in if you're not putting the lives first? So that had an impact on me. And most of my friends, or most people who I, knocked on their doors, because I did loads of leafleting and also campaign also. So when you hear the residents, they're not interested in voting. But as the election drew closer, I saw people who wanted to also now register when, coming back for the second or the third time to knock on their doors or to, leaflet. They said, I think the events of the last week, shaped my decision and I'm going to vote. But why should we leave it to the last end? Why don't we make up our time? So the last government has been in power for a long time, or within the last 1 year, something should actually, inform your decision for the next coming year. We shouldn't leave it to the last, bit of time because of, one party coming forward, and we are having a general election in the next 5 years. I know I'm too soon saying that, but what happens then should start now, right? What informed that decision should start now, and which is why, as all of us gathered here for the conference, we should also help, shape the mindset of people around us, understand that humanity first, and that had an impact on me.
I agree with that completely. And I want to bring up the word that I think John Battle used, and we've all kind of used as well, which was vision. And we're saying there is a lack of vision in our politics. I think that's the thing that's so uninspirational for young people, because I know lots of us can barely remember a time before a Tory government. Mm-hmm. And I have to admit, that can be pretty crushing. So if I share a really quick story, is that okay? Yeah. So I was having a conversation with my friends about disarmament, and we were having a discussion, and it was fantastic, and everyone basically came to the conclusion that, yeah, we shouldn't have nuclear weapons. And that was the opinion of everyone on the table I was talking to. And then I said, okay, great, so shouldn't this be what our government does? And then everyone suddenly went, oh, no, but we couldn't actually do that. And it's this difference between idealism and pragmatism that we were discussing, I think, earlier today, and yesterday. And it's, I think the thing that is lacking is this vision to say, actually, some of this idealistic stuff is achievable, but we don't see that because we've not experienced that. We've not really experienced a politics that says, you know what, maybe we can make a positive difference instead of, oh, we'll just scrape by and we'll just try and get the votes by being inclusive, being shutting our borders, things like this. So I think a serious issue is the lack of vision. And I think that's very closely linked to hope, because if there's no vision, what's there to hope for?
Just to add, because I forgot to mention it before, so it's not really building on it, but that as I've attended training for how to help children, particularly with eco-anxiety, and one of the things that is really, really important is to try not to have a solutionist mindset, to just actually listen to, as an adult, to listen to a child saying, I'm scared. And I think that that's something that I personally need a bit more room for in my life as well. I think hope is obviously incredibly important, and I think it's really sad that dystopia has been so mainstream because it stops people from having a vision of what they can look forward to. I don't know if you've heard the quote of, like, we find it so easy to imagine the end of the world, but we can't imagine the end of capitalism, which is, that absolutely blows my mind. But I think that having a space in your heart to hold and express deep fear about the future and to be able to talk about that and experience catharsis with other people is really important, although it can really hurt. Because understanding what other people are going through is crucial.
Thank you for those really insightful answers. Just kind of picking up on that idea of hope and a vision and coming to a place of understanding. And I guess also with the whole topic of this conference, thinking beyond, if you can, thinking beyond just Westminster, talking about decision-making, participation and power dynamics, what do you guys think just politics looks like? Loaded question.
I think one of the big things for me, especially with the people that I've met over the last year and working with people seeking sanctuary, is that I'd like to see decision-making that involves the people that it impacts, where their voice is heard and where their voice is recognised and where they have a say in the things that are going to directly impact them. I think that's the most important thing to me.
For me, just politics rings a key word to me, which is accountability, right? I mean, politics that is accountable, right? Pure, which understand what the people really wants, which uncovers, right, what the people are saying and, you know, borders more on their challenges. Let's just talk politics. Let's just know that this is for what will better the lives of the people and enough. Just like what the speaker said this afternoon, the government is trying to tilt to the business side now instead of you know, being more of looking out for the people, but going into the business side of things and just wanting to make profit. So when government goes into that angle, they are leaving just politics. It needs to come back, like, the discourse needs to shift and, like, the centre needs to hold and also come back to what it originally means, like, what politics is for the people, by the people, you know. Thank you.
I think for me, what I see, like, just politics as is a listening politics. I think, unfortunately, the discourse of, like, the last 14 years has pushed our politics from something that's more actionable and focused on listening to experts rather than saying, what do the experts know? Don't listen to them. And that extends to, like, communities as well. And I think, again, just to go back to the point about the sort of, we need to think about the next election. To me, this election wasn't the most important election as much as it was talked about in the news. I honestly think the next election will be the one that will decide how this country turns. And it was obvious the Tories were not going to win. You know, they'd wasted too much and they'd spent their political capital. But what they are really good at is they are really, really effective campaigners. That's what kept them in power so long. And unless we actually see that proper, just listening politics, I mean, you only have to look in Europe. We've got an incredible rise of the far right. We were extremely lucky in France that Marine Le Pen didn't get in. Plus, with Trump in America, there's a genuine fear that, you know, it's this battle against populism, it's far from over. And unless we actually have this just politics with a listening government that's involved in the community, I really do fear where this country will vote. So I'm still hopeful, though, that we will see that change and people can learn that politics can be a force for good. But I think it's something that we all have to be aware of, that it's all our duty to keep this sort of just politics in focus and keep the government to account, because if we don't, you know, we are at risk of what could happen. And I love Lord of the Rings, and there's a fantastic Lord of the Rings quote, which is when Gandalf says, you know, it's not the big heroic actions that keep the darkness at bay, it's the everyday acts of ordinary people. And I like to think that with proper just politics and listening, it's those everyday people that are at the forefront of those policy decisions. So just really keep focused and think about keeping out the rise of the far right in the UK.
I wanted to say, I'm not really sure I do have a real answer of what I think just politics looks like. But I have been... Sorry, that's like, I don't have an answer. That's my answer. But I have been thinking about something the last couple of days, and it kind of just stuck with me in the homily. Some very specific words were mentioned to do with politics, and they were honesty and integrity. And something I learned as part of my A-levels that I think is just so interesting, I just wanted to throw it out to you guys, is there's actually, on the government website, there's something called the 7 Principles of Public Office. And 2 of them are honesty and integrity. So I just wanted to throw that out there and also kind of maybe question kind of the ideals of our politics and how closely they align to kind of our social justice goals, and also consider whether the ideals that are already in place are being met.
I think I would also say, kind of a bit out of left field, but that I think that a just politics should be more fun. There is some statistic that I absolutely cannot remember about the incredible effectiveness of learning through play versus learning through more conventional methods. It's a crazy amount more effective. And I think that politics should be serious, and there are elements of it that are completely serious, but that if we are to engage people in politics and in making the world a better place, whether that starts with a local community, it has to be fun. And I think the place for fun and laughter and joy there should be more of a place for it.
I really... I really agree with that. I think a lot of what I feel people have started to be voting for is the silly white blonde man on telly, which is why Donald Trump and Boris Johnson have been doing so well. But it's because they're, in a way, funny and they're fun. And so if you can make just politics fun, people are much more likely to vote for it.
Does anyone else have anything to add? Can I just jump into an anecdote real quick? I attended an event the other week called Call to Action, which was run by Citizens UK. And I'm really sorry, Chantel, if I'm stealing something from your session tomorrow. But basically, these great, great young people in schools sort of going through the process of community organizing and campaigning for issues that are close to them, close to their community. And one of the things that stuck out to me there was one of the recommendations for campaigning and for even protesting is just make it fun. Don't like, otherwise you end up getting portrayed as angry, upset protesters. And yeah, I think that's really stuck with me. So, yeah. And now moving on to a slightly, different question. We've kind of been chatting about this one, sort of yesterday evening, and I think a bit of early this morning, before we went to bed. The bar was closed by that point. But it was the question is how does your faith inform your engagement with politics? It's a bit of a sensitive question. But I think just some of the answers were some of the things we spoke about last night, and I won't give too much away, because obviously you're supposed to answer these questions. I think it's really interesting some of the perspectives that I've heard at least. Who wants to go first? How does your faith inform your engagement with politics? Well, has it affected how you voted? Obviously, first-time voters. Did your faith or your values have any kind of influence on that? Being here is, I would say, inherently political. Attending a conference called Just Politics. And has your faith influenced that in any way?
I think I always think of the MP, John McDonnell, who says he's never, ever read a word of Marx, but he's only read the Bible. And his whole perspective on politics, he calls it Christian socialism. And I sometimes feel like I have a sort of complicated relationship with the Catholic Church, because I very, very much believe in Catholic social teaching and the good works, and I know for a fact that my current viewpoints and perspectives have been formed by that. And my God, especially attending conference for the past 20 years, that has played a huge part. All the vegetarian meals, they've all helped me. But it's now all meat, though. I was surprised by that, but I know for a fact that that's definitely formed, and especially meeting all you folks, without a doubt. I can't deny that. I think where I feel I think we've all said it felt complicated is we all care very strongly about social issues, and I think it's fair to say that the church has been problematic in some of those issues, the way it addresses it, and the way maybe it gets into like camps about things. Like, we talk a lot about sort of trying to like disagree agreeably, and I think we need to think about how we can also see that like at a church level as well. And it's hard as someone like in your or like from a lay background, because it can feel that you can't really change much. But I know the one thing that does change it is the faith of Justice and Peace people and everyone here and the good works that carries out. And yeah, that definitely influenced what a box I was ticking, put it that way.
The way my faith impacts my involvement in politics, I think, born Catholic, credo Catholic, I understand fully well the church is involved in politics, because as a church, the church wouldn't form a political party. No, it is the members of the church who are part and parcel of those parties. So it is a duty of care to understand that it is my civic responsibility and duty to be involved in politics, and also to uphold, you know, justice, fairness, you know, uprightness in what I'm doing, in deciding who is to lead, and to also bring also the challenges, and also if I'm to run for a political office, or if I'm in a situation where a political leader is listening to me, I have to also let them know this is my viewpoint and this is why I'm saying this, because my faith is largely involved in this decision. So in a nutshell, I'm saying my faith is a part and parcel of what I do daily, which involves my lifestyle, politics, and everything. So it's a sine qua non, I can't do without it. So it is, yeah.
I would say that my participation in politics has been wholly formed by my Catholic upbringing. And like a lot of people here, you know, being a raging feminist and a Catholic, a bit, it's real rough. And trying to hold that paradox in my head and still feel okay is very, very difficult. But like many people here, as Michael was mentioning, my beliefs about Catholic social teaching are fundamental to who I am, because that's how I was raised. And I think that, Bishop Gooley was talking, it's kind of it's a shared language that I have with a whole group of people. And I think that's really, really important. And I feel like there's more I can do within the church than I can do outside of it. My father and my mother have been very involved in Justice and Peace, and it's kind of what I know. And I would like to go off on a small anecdote as well, if that's okay, about someone who I follow on Instagram, because social media can be excellent. It can be really, really good. I know that there's a lot about it that's bad, but it can be pretty phenomenal. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of Michaela Loach. She's a phenomenal climate activist. I really, really recommend that you follow her. But she talks about mycelium. I don't know if you guys know about mycelium. It's kind of... Yeah. It's the underground kind of root system of a fungus, essentially. And when you see a mushroom kind of pop up in the forest, you're kind of like, where on earth did this come from? But it's been this nourishing root system that has been going for years and years and years. And Michaela Loach kind of encourages this way of looking at our work, our shared work, as mycelium underground. And she uses the example of the blocking of the Cambo oil field, that we were successful in getting that blocked after a really, really long time, but that the roots of that work go back hundreds of years into work that people did that didn't, quote-unquote, yield mushrooms. There wasn't a big mushroom of, hey, we've stopped Cambo. It was forming those networks, like this Justice and Peace Conference, that don't yield mushrooms, but they eventually kind of do down the line. And I kind of see that as a lot of the work that you guys have done, of the older generation, that hopefully we can now build on. And that doesn't really answer the question, but I wanted to get the mycelium in there because I think it's a really powerful, I think it's a really powerful, great metaphor that really, I really love. So sorry.
I've seen you writing, Anna. Okay. How does your faith inform your engagement with politics? I think very often it's the other way around for me. It's all a bit messy. Very often it's rooted in Catholic social teaching. I think that's something we all share. It's amazing things like the preferential option for the poor and the common good, which where on earth are you going to hear about them anywhere else? It's something that people don't talk about and they really should. And to be honest, reading the Green Manifesto, it was very... I think that might have been the first manifesto I've read that maybe does touch on the common good. It was very exciting stuff. That's all to say, I think the only faith I could have would be political. I think if it wasn't, it's not something I could endorse. Because both have developed together, I think. So without my faith being hollow, it has to be political. That's it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'd like to add on that a bit. I kind of share that feeling. And I'll just say that kind of activism and my faith are just completely intertwined. I mean, I'd say that I go on marches, I do charity work, I do all that because I'm Catholic. And I'm Catholic because it allows me to do those things and make those connections.
Speaking of the importance of making connections.
Mycelium connections.
Yep, mycelium connections, there you go. That's how it was relevant. Mm. Thank you. What final question here before we take some questions from the audience. What do people need to do in your experience, in your opinion? What do people need to do over the next 5 years to actively participate in politics?
I think going back to what you said about Michaela Loach, I think she's a brilliant example of what was mentioned earlier about making politics fun and engaging young people in a way that's creative and through social media. And I think especially currently there's a lot of fear of the unknown around social media and kind of fear of the misinformation and disinformation that spread, which is absolutely a real worry. But I think it can absolutely also be used as a tool for good. And I think she's a great example of that, with like more serious content as well as sharing kind of the more fun side of it, and that actually issues that young people care about can apply to how they vote, and they do have a say in politics, and they do have a voice that can be used.
She talks about how her faith informs her radical.
To your question, what people need to do in the next 5 years, you know, just keep, you know, to keep the government accountable, right? To always ensure that they stay in line, they're doing the right thing, calling them out. Also, in our own, you know, communities, local groups, focus groups, wherever we find ourselves, we just need to keep talking about it, keep the candle burning, keep the voice, you know, aloud. Keep talking about all this, because what the government wants, or a government that doesn't want to do what the people want, what the government, their mindset is They want the people to be calm, to keep quiet, to not talk about all these things so that they could go scot-free. But when we keep talking about them, you see, they keep being in line. Just like we say, just politics. Just politics is going to come about when we are ensuring that they are doing that, which is for the good of the people. So I think it's more of don't let the steam go off. Keep it on, yeah, for the next 5 years.
Sorry, what was the question again? What do people need to do? Right, yeah, that's it. So I'm going to sort of not start by answering the question. I'm going to say 5 years ago was the last time I came to the Justice and Peace Conference, and then the pandemic hit, and this is the first time I've been back. And I think during that time, during the pandemic, I lost my engagement in politics completely. Politicians just became silly figures to laugh at. And I wasn't really thinking about what I was doing, who I was voting for. It was more just what everyone around me was voting for. And I guess coming to this conference has started to make me think a lot more. And I'm starting to realise now how little I was engaging before. And it's motivated me to engage in politics more over the next few years. So I just want to thank you all for that. And yeah, in terms of what we can do over the next 5 years, I think if other young people who have lost their interest can have a similar experience to this, if we can get them to events and sort of get them to think about the world, then maybe they'll have more motivation to engage and to make a difference.
I know one thing I want to start doing is start attending constituency meetings. That's something like, although I've always been like, a keen follower of politics, I've never actually attended a constituency meeting. And I think what would be nice, I think right now I'm sort of in a politics of like healing, and even just at like that very simplistic, like basic democratic level, I think just turning up to meetings as like the individuals that we all are, providing those viewpoints, being able to network, just from that grassroots level, I know for me that's something that I'd like to do, and I think maybe going forward something we could all have a go at, because I think politics has been bloody horrible for like so long that it would be nice to actually be part of a democratic process that is more positive. And the beautiful thing, if we all have that idea, is that we will actually start to see that like genuine representation, that you can meet with people, talk to people, you know, whatever their background. I think it's the sort of return of community that we need. We've promoted the individual for a very long time now, and just something really simple, like just turn up like at a constituency, meeting your neighbours, constituents, providing your own voice for justice and peace. If everyone did that, I mean, what, 650 constituencies? I don't know how many have attended conference here today, but if we could even just get like one of us in each constituency being that voice, doing that networking, you know, I still am hopeful and need to think about that next election.
Thinking about healing and kind of community and communication, because something I noticed a lot in my friends was the lack of trust and kind of faith and belief in authority figures. So all my friends who were voting for the first time, you know, they tried to do research and they kind of knew what each party stood for. They just didn't believe them or didn't trust that they were going to do anything they said they did. So I think part of what we need to do moving forward is, because that lady this morning, she's talking, you know, and it kind of restored my faith in politicians a little bit, that talk, but my friends haven't seen that. There's just no trust there. So I think that's something we really need to work on, is that kind of communication and building up that trust.
Yeah, isn't it exciting that politicians can actually do things successfully, we've discovered, and quickly. Wow, it's very refreshing. And I think that's a shift in mindset for me. It's been very quickly since the election, suddenly, oh, this is what politics could be like. I think there's something key that the next 5 years could kind of bring about, or the next, yeah. I think the sort of mindless, automatic, default pragmatism that we have,
It's kind of, oh, well, nothing can change, and this sort of, it kind of leads to this apathy. I think that shouldn't be the default. I think we should have, especially as Catholics, as faith, we should have a default of hope. I think that's something that we should carry into politics. And I think that's a really strong way to kind of keep combating this apathy that's been developing over the last few years. Just say, well, actually, we've got a reason to be hopeful. I think that would make a very exciting next couple of years.
Excellent. Well, thank you, everyone. Over to you, our wonderful audience. Do you have any questions for us?
Hello, everyone. My name is Jude. I am 38, so I don't know if I fall under young adults or old adults. So I'm in a limbo. So I've got a question for you all. I want to assume or make, I suppose all of you, your parents are all Catholics. So if none of you were Catholics, what would make you be here? How would you get here? Or what would interest you to be here if you weren't Catholic?
A free ticket. I'm really serious. And it's a shame that it is that way, but a free ticket and more fun.
Yeah, I've met a lot of young adults this weekend who've actually kind of been invited, through parishes, through recommendations, through different charities. But I have often wondered, actually, if my parents weren't Catholic, would I be doing any of this? So, I mean, thank goodness they are. Is what you're saying.
Can I answer?
The reason why I ask the question is because of the future generation, I think, and maybe more younger people as well, so I just would like to know. So if I was speaking to any, what would be the conversation or point, or what would be the turning point to get them here, basically?
To answer you, I think, yes, I'm not here because I'm Catholic, first of all. Yes, I am a Catholic, but I believe in social justice. It is what I believe in. I'm involved in several social causes which I really want to see the change happen, right? The first time I came to this conference, and after then we went to COP28 in Glasgow, and that was me, Michael, and Anna. We were marching under the rain in Glasgow with several, like when I say hundreds of thousands of people in the streets of Glasgow demanding for climate justice, and everyone who I spoke to in that crowd, none of them were Catholics, and that inspired me. So, and I have always, and I've set up this network in Nigeria, where I originally come from, I've set up this network of young climate adults, so, and it goes across different tribes, religions, and other, because we want the government to do what is right, we want to hold them accountable, and that is the legacy we are trying to, you know, raise over there. And so it doesn't really need to be you being a Catholic or you being a Christian or from a different faith. So to answer your question, if I wasn't a Catholic, I would be here because I believe in social justice. I believe in the cause which everyone here is, you know, trying to discuss and the challenges we want to be solved. Yeah.
I'm Chris. I'm 64, so I'm certainly not a young person. Thank you for what you shared. You really are an inspiration. Your embodiment and commitment to Catholic social teaching is tremendous. I speak as a priest. What expectations do you have, if any, of your parish clergy?
As in, what would we like to see? Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I haven't been to Mass in a while, and that I think kind of says a bit more than I could. But the Masses that I've been to, I've only heard two priests give a homily on the environment, which drives me up to the freaking wall. it doesn't feel very... a lot of the homilies don't feel relevant, which I think is just an issue across the Catholic Church, really. But also, there's I went to a church in Milton Keynes, which has a particular... Because of scheduling conflicts, barely any priests, and so the lay people lead the Mass without a priest, and it was phenomenal. It was absolutely incredible. Not that priests aren't necessary, obviously, but the more involvement for lay people and for young people.
I'd probably say, if anything, what I'd like from a priest would be to step back and let the lay people...
And really listen.
Yeah, it's absolutely. I think there's a massive gap between what we all see and experience outside of the church and what we experience in the church, and the church is very behind what we see outside. Even the tiny things like inclusive language and the lack of inclusive language. Yeah. But as soon as I hear that in a Mass, I just switch off, and all I am is angry for the rest of the Mass, and then they walk out and think, well, why did I go? If anything, I'd say for a priest, please, lay people are fantastic. and they can really do a lot when they feel they don't have to go through a priest. So if anything, I would say, please trust your parishes, because at some point, that's what's got to happen anyway. that would be what I'd ask for a priest, yeah.
Thank you for asking.
I think we almost need to go back to a kind of like priesthood of the sort of, with some rules in place, of like the sort of medieval period. And that sounds really peculiar, but if you think about how the church used to be, it essentially was the welfare state for many people. It provided effectively what we'd call today social services, healthcare, all these things. And if you think that was when the church was most powerful, I'd argue that's probably when the church was the most sort of active in people's lives. And I think what we need to look at is moving the church in a way that's more focused on social action. And I can tell you now, Father Chris is like a fantastic embodiment of that. He is like the ultimate grassroots priest, like Jan Hus of the modern age. But I think that's what needs to be promoted more, because I think if we concentrate on the sort of good works first, I think everything should naturally fall around that. And also definitely on the point of like inclusivity. I mean, I think it's hard being a young person in the Catholic Church, and I'm saying that as a bloke, so I cannot imagine what it is like being a young lady in the Catholic Church. I think it's incredibly difficult. But yeah, I think definitely a return to a more sort of social action, social provision church. I think that's what I'd like to see.
Hi. So I have a question, just really seeking your advice, I suppose, and maybe even if this is something that you don't have an answer to right now and want to think about and maybe speak to me later on or tomorrow. But at Justice and Peace Scotland just now, we are trying to engage senior secondary school pupils more in Justice and Peace work, linked with Catholic social teaching, but also linked with our faith. So sort of try to bridge all the things that sort of you guys have been talking about. And one thing that we're looking to do is to try and think of ways to involve maybe 16, 17-year-olds in advocacy in their school communities and their parish communities. And I guess I was just looking for if you have had any experience of doing that. I know some of you said you work in schools or work with youth, young people and stuff like that. And obviously some of you are maybe not so far out of school yourself. So just in terms of, you know, what sort of advocacy things could young people do beyond just like a letter writing campaign or signing a petition? Just looking for some ideas or inspiration. And as I say, if you need time to think about it, then please track me down, because I'd be keen to hear. So thank you.
Well,
go for it.
Oh, okay. As a person who's very, very recently been 17,
I think I'd like to have a real discussion about this at some point, but mentioned in the introduction that I was awarded with a Gold Faith in Action Award. Thanks. And so basically that's... to get that, what happens is it's a initiative in schools, and it's run kind of by the diocese.
Sorry? SynFed, isn't it, as well?
SynFed, yes, thank you. And it's... What you have to do is they kind of support young people, but it's kind of encouraging them to start their own projects. Because I just want to assure people that there can be that passion in young people. I know we've talked about how we see a lack of vision and a lack of hope, but there can be that passion if it's facilitated correctly. And 17-year-olds specifically is a great year to do that, because that's year 12, so they have a lot more independence, and they're not... But I'd say the only difficult thing about it is because you have to be really mindful that they're only there for a year, and you can't kind of... So you're going to have a repeatable structure in place, because you're going to have to work with a completely different set of people each year. But, yeah, I'd really like to discuss tomorrow, yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. And I'm surprised Eleanor didn't mention this, but a couple of years ago, we did what we called a social action day for our diocese.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And thankfully, Hallam's very small, so we could contact all the secondary schools. We arranged essentially a day with workshops for young people, kind of inspired by the conference. We went away and we said we want something that we can bring our friends to, that schools would support and bring other school people to, so we can kind of see this stuff that's going on. We brought everyone together in a school. We organised the different groups to come in. We had Pax Christi, we had the Columbans, we had CAFOD. It was fantastic. We finished the day with an action workshop where people planned with their teachers about something they could do in school. And then they went away. And then we did it the next year because it worked really well. But there's definitely ways of doing something that will really inspire people. In fact, we went to Lourdes a couple of years later, didn't we, on a school trip, and someone came up to us and said, oh, you two, you were the people who did that day. That was, you know, that's changed. That's changed me. So it's access to things like this, people like yourselves, that really inspire young people. That's the reason we tried to get so many people in, because we know from experience it's you guys that actually get us fired up. It's finding out, hold on, there's stuff going on. We didn't know about this. There are issues we didn't know about, and there are people already there doing stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think having a way to get young people together and see this stuff is fantastic, and there are definitely models and ways of doing that. Or in different dioceses with lots of different schools, so absolutely.
I'd also say talk to Chantal.
Yeah, yes.
I think as well, similarly to what you said, young people do care about social justice issues, and they're passionate and they're aware of what's going on. And I think quite often the barrier in terms of the kind of Catholic context is that when young people hear the word Catholic, they don't automatically think social justice, advocacy, activism. So I think that's a big barrier in terms of making the connection between faith and action itself. But I think from what I've seen in schools over the past year, it's empowering for young people to see Catholicism in a different light, and to realise that actually Catholic social teaching can inform them feeling empowered and taking action.
Hello again. If you had the chance tomorrow to ask the Pope or Pope Francis to change one thing in the church, what might that be?
You might have to give us a minute.
Female priests would be great.
Gay marriage would be lovely. acceptance of transgender people. I honestly, you name it. it would be nice.
Yeah. I was going to say gay marriage, but you've stolen that one.
Sorry.
Yeah, I would say, because of that kind of, we're talking about the universal language. Mm-hmm. When I talk to people my age who don't go to a Catholic school and don't really have any experience of Catholicism, the first things they associate with Catholicism are homophobia and sexism.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Which is not inaccurate.
So my name's Eben. I'm from Leeds. I represent Sparks Leeds, as Sir John Bartlett said. Yeah, more than a question, it's a comment, actually. Hats off to you all, actually. You know, hearing you guys speak, you know, gives us hope. You know, gives us, like, inspires us to do, you know, to do things and get involved and make politics just. It won't happen by itself, isn't it? We have to make it just. We have to get involved to make it just. So you guys are seriously inspirational. Hats off to you all. Yeah. Just to add on to that, what just politics means to me, it has to be based on morality, isn't it? You know, being pragmatic, compromising your morality does not mean just politics. It should be based on equity, isn't it? Not equality. More than equality, should be based on equity. And, you know, and moreover, as she said, just politics should be fun. No, it should be joyful. You know, joyfulness does not give you dopamine 24/7, but, you know, it'll give you that inner peace. So, I mean, I'm so happy to be here. It's my first conference, by the way. I mean, hats off to you all, not to me, but to you all. You know, coming here sort of inspired me, like, very much to get involved and make politics just. And thank you.
I would also like to add married priests. Just in that term.
Just a couple of points on the Nolan principles, which you mentioned. A couple of months ago, just when the election was first announced, I actually listened to a different kind of question time. And I have to say, the respectful listening was totally absent. So congratulations on managing to do better than the ones who were actually put up to it as models of how we negotiate and work with each other. But actually, for the first time ever, one of the audience actually asked the panel how they were going to comply with the Nolan principles, and there was a deafening silence because obviously the people on the panel didn't really know either what they were or felt too ashamed to say what they were, because it was perfectly obvious that they wouldn't have been able to put a tick by certainly all of them or most of them. So that was one good thing. And I have to say, from the point of view of our National Justice and Peace Network, we first became involved with this in working with the Quaker Truth and Integrity Group. A couple of years ago, they did a session with us, and we were so impressed with the way that they were totally committed to that. And so I'd like to say thank you to them for their contribution as partners to this conference. So that's just another thing. And the other thing, I think we ought to say thank you very much to people who have funded young people to come to this conference. We have actually been seeking funding, and I would have to mention actually the Jesuit Fund for Social Justice. They have funded a good number of young people to come, and it will be wonderful to be able to feed back what has come out of this. And then just for yourselves, I know you've put a lot of work and a lot of preparation into this. So what do you want to do next? What do you want us to do? And what do you want to do with all the efforts and your voices? Because you can't just say, well, that was a really nice way to spend a Saturday evening. We've had a nice weekend. Thank you and goodbye. What do you want to do next? What do you want from us? And what do you want to say, what you to do for, you know, with us or alongside us? And be a young people's focus group for us wise elders, not oldies, although oldies is probably more accurate, But yeah, those are just questions to you, really.
Thanks, Anne. I would say the wise elders, since elderly wouldn't be appropriate.
Not as young people.
Yeah. What I would want you all to do is teach us more. Yeah. Get us more equipped to carry on this legacy, because we are here because we want to carry on what we've experienced or what we've learned from you all, and we want to be better for also the people who we are going to pass this on to. So keep teaching us, don't keep anyone away from us, so just let it all out so that we understand.
I don't know about you guys, but I really appreciate the opportunity to meet you all. I mean, some of you I've not met, or some of you I only meet at conference. And I think it's really powerful to meet other young people who are interested in any way to get us to meet up more or to allow us to continue a conversation, which I'm sure we can work out together as well. But I think it's fantastic to have a group that supports each other. So any way to keep a group going is appreciated, yeah.
I would say I really appreciate the ability to speak. I was really surprised, actually, to be asked. And I think I would want you guys to listen to young people in your life and to expect them to listen to you as well, truly. But really listen in a way that maybe you haven't before. And also on a more practical note, I would say having a young person as a speaker next year, and having shorter sessions.
Yeah, I'd just say that outreach is really important. So what I'd really like you guys to do is keep talking to young people and show them that there is this path and there is this way to become, you know, more active in their communities, more active in their faith, and more active in politics. And I think it's kind of on us to kind of take that path and really try and follow it.
Yeah, in this training that I mentioned, one of the things that we had to do together that could be a helpful shorthand for you, would you wish to talk to young people in your life, was we were asked, what breaks your heart and what gives you hope about the future? And that was really good. It was a great jumping off point for us to talk and to really get to the bottom of how young people feel.
Right, well, there you go. That seems to me like the takeaways from that last question were listen and dialogue. Thank you for all of your questions. Just wrapping up, I want to leave you all here with a challenge. And this, often when young people and young adults are asked if they see themselves as leaders, the question is met with a no, not really. Or there's maybe a hesitancy in their answering. And I would just like you to ask yourself why that might be. What are they missing out on? What opportunities do they have? If you've come away from this session having learned something and maybe feeling encouraged to take an opportunity on young leaders or on a young leader, I would like to urge you to do that and to give them a chance. Thank you.